Hello? Hello? Hello?
Alright. Miss De La Feva, where were you born?
I was born in Lancaster County. Pennsylvania.
Now, is that where you got your schooling?
No.
You have a machine on there.
Same time. All right. Now, where did you get your schooling, Mr. LaFeva?
My early schooling was started in Portland, Oregon. That's where I started school. And I remember very much a lot of the details of my early days in Oregon and in California.
And then when did you...
My father was worked for a traction company out there. And we lived in... in San Francisco at the time of the earthquake in 1906. I remember quite distinctly how the earthquake affected me and my folks. There was a tremendous shaking of the ground, and my father picked up a baby sister and took her out the front door of where we lived. And my mother picked my younger sister and me up, and we went out the back door of the house. And I remember distinctly that the chimney of the house, or the building we lived in, let's put it building, we lived in, the chimney fell off and dropped to the ground. And there was much confusion, as you probably would believe. And I remember very distinctly that very shortly after the quake, we could see from our house, which was near Twin Peaks of San Francisco, smoke coming up in various areas. And before very long, we could see the flames starting. Now, my father worked for the traction company at that time, and he was called to duty, and my mother and I were left pretty much alone. At that time, I was...
Start again. Now, when did you come east?
We came east a month after the earthquake.
Your family decided, father decided
That's
he didn't
right.
want to stay out there?
And we visited then, of course, my father's family, and stayed with them a little while until they could decide what they wanted to do and what kind of work my father could get and so on like that.
So you lived in Lancaster?
Lancaster County.
Lancaster County.
Yeah.
And you went to school in Pennsylvania?
No. I started school in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, but when you came east?
When we came east, then I went to the public schools of Pennsylvania.
All right, now how did you happen to come to Conowingo?
Well, that's quite a long story. I taught country school 2 years after graduating from high school. And at certain times, I took certain courses at Millersville University, was a state college at that time, in Millersville, Pennsylvania.
And after you taught school, what did you do?
After I taught school, let me get my thoughts in line here. Is this running now? Was developed at the Holtwood Hydroelectric Station. And the power from Holtwood, and by the way, that was originally called McCall's Ferry, too. The names were interchanged.
But then you worked in Pennsylvania for the Philadelphia lot.
No, that was the Pennsylvania Water and Power Company. And at that time, I suppose I felt that I couldn't get very far in the electrical business without getting more education, and I decided at that time that I'd go to Tri-State University, which was a college at that time in Angola, Indiana, and I, with my practical experience and other interests, I taught some classes at Tri-State, particularly in the laboratory and physics area.
Now, when did you go with Philadelphia Light?
I graduated from Tri-State University in 1922 with a degree of B.S. in electricity. At that time, I began looking for a job, and Philadelphia Electric at that time was looking for some field for somebody with that experience, and I started with Philadelphia Electric in October of 1922. Philadelphia Electric was interested in the Conowingo area for power development. For a number of years before they owned the property, there was no area in the east that was large enough or consumed enough of energy to take care of a sizable outlet of power. Philadelphia and Baltimore were the closest areas that had a demand for such a block of power. So the steps were taken to build a hydro plant at Conowingo. The reason that area was used, it was close to tidewater, that didn't affect the elevations too much, and in 1926, assume control of the various river facilities, such as the canals and land necessary to flood for a reservoir. And here I was in the engineering department as a field engineer with some experience of the river and and hydroelectric plants, and they picked me to be field engineer of the Conowingo work that was going along at that time. When the power plant was completed and ready for service, they put their finger on me with some person of experience, both with the river and power plant work, and I was chosen as assistant superintendent of Conowingo plant in 1900 and 27. When Mrs. Lefevre and I moved to Maryland, we moved to facilities were rather tight at that time because of construction personnel, and we had to find a place to live in this area, and the closest area was Cardiff, Maryland, and we moved to, at that time, to Cardiff, Maryland, and I traveled by car between Cardiff and the job daily. When the plant, was put into operation, my presence was required that I live closer to the closer to my job, and we found a place in one of the construction cottages, which was located close by the power plant. The village, the Conowingo plant village at that time, had only two dwellings, one for the supposed superintendent and the assistant superintendent. Later on that year, we moved to the Conowingo plant village in what was known then, and the only one on the property was what I called and will refer to as number two house.
Mr. Lefevre, when you talk about the plant village, just where was this?
I'll tell you. The plant village, those that remember the and have any knowledge of where the village is, there's a 100,000 gallon water tank there now, which was used then for construction, during construction.
That where the workers lived?
Not at that time. I guess I'll get to that.
All right.
I guess I'll get to that. Those familiar with the Conowingo plant village now will realize that it was only two dwellings in the area of the water tower that is still used in existence there. Now let's see, where was I?
You had moved closer to
the... Oh yeah, that's right.
And we moved... to your work.
At that time, we moved to what is known now as house number 2 in the planned village. Later on, the village was developed for other workmen that was required at the power plant, and it additional dwellings were built and are still in use at this date.
Are they still used for people who work at the dam?
Yes, it's the village now is not is just used for workmen at Conowingo or at Peach Bottom plants. Plant which was developed somewhat years after the Conowingo plant was developed.
Now, you came at the very beginning.
I was...
As before the dam was even started, you came right at the beginning.
As far as I know, at the present date, I am the only living person that was connected with somewhat with the management of the plant that is living.
Now, the workers that built the dam, were local, they local workers, or were they people they had to bring in?
The Conowingo Dam, or the Conowingo Project, put it that way, was built by Stone Webster, a construction organization which still exists from Boston, Massachusetts. And they sent their engineers, and the design and construction was under the supervision of the Stone and Webster organization from the start. When the plant went into operation, their supervision, more or less, was discontinued, and Philadelphia Electric engineering, management, and so on assumed those responsibilities.
All the materials they needed for the dam to build it, how did they get them to the site?
That's a good question, because one of the Susquehanna canals was connects Haverty Grace with the upper part of Pennsylvania, had a towpath for the canal in the early days, which allowed the mules, horses, or whatnot to pull the canal boats from Haverty Grace on up into Pennsylvania at that time. And then that towpath was used for a construction railroad, which began in Haverty Grace, connected with Pennsylvania Railroad, which connected from Haverty Grace to the job site of Conowingo. And all the material and construction material and the power plant equipment and so on was brought up that construction railroad Tucanawingo.
So it was all brought to Havre de Grace first by some means, rail or boat rail.
Yes.
And then it was all towed up?
No, it was pulled up this temporary railroad on the towpath.
Oh, they
hauled up
they
by
built,
railroad.
They actually built a temporary railroad.
Oh, yeah, that railroad was in existence up until one of the more recent floods that destroyed most of the roadbed tracks, etc.
Well, they must have had to have a whole many people just for that one part of the operation.
Well, various departments of Philadelphia Electric and the contractor that built Conowingo, sure, they had a regular train crew. Many of the people that worked at Conowingo during construction used that temporary railroad to get to work.
Now, did these people have to do what you did, just find accommodations anywhere in the area?
Well, at that particular time, there were cottages in the area, and supervision and engineers moved from wherever they lived through many of them from a distance had worked at previous to this at other hydroelectric plants being constructed. In those early days, there's a group of people, engineers and laborers, whatnot, that traveled from large jobs to another around throughout the country. Many of them were connected with one of the original hydroelectric plants on the Mississippi at Keokuk, Iowa. And when the Conowingo job was finished, they left for another hydroelectric plant that was being constructed by the Union Electric Company at I forget the name of the that project, but I visited many times later on.
Now, how long did it take to build
Conowingo plant? It was job started until it was in operation and practically put in operation. It was one of the shortest periods of such a job that had been experienced or had been done before that. This was the largest block of hydroelectric power, or any power as far as I know, that was put into service, was built in such a short time and put in service as a major project.
Now, when was it put into service?
Conowingo went into official operation, and this was for, it had to have a date for official service for tax purposes so on like that. And we went officially into service on March the 1st, midnight of in 1928.
That was a short time to build that, wasn't it?
It was the shortest time, and at that particular time during construction, there were over 3,000 men working on the project, and they lived in cottages and traveled from Baltimore, Harrisburg, Philadelphia, of all nearby areas, because 3,000 men was a lot of men at that time when automobiles were just in its infancy. So how they got there, I don't remember.
They obviously all didn't have automobiles to get there.
But the job had to stop officially for bookkeeping purposes on March the 1st, 1928. Although there were various odds and ends of jobs that had to be done, and construction really wasn't completed till probably sometime in 1929 or early 30s.
Now, just what did you do?
Well, what I did was, and what the operators at Conowingo did was, first of all, keep the plant going and iron out all the difficulties that occur when most any kind of equipment is put into service. So, a lot of equipment requires trial runs and tests made, find their efficiency and iron out all the things that go wrong with the equipment when you put it into service.
Then after it was in service and you got most of the bugs out.
Yes, well, we had bugs for a year or two after we started. We went into official operation. But we had to have a date for official operation for federal and state taxes, because there were a lot of federal and state agencies that were looking for some place to get more taxes that industry and developments generally occur at such a time.
Now, stop this man. All right, now once you got it started, maybe you can tell me some of the things that interested you.
Of course, we had troubles occurring for the first 2 or 3 or 4 years that we had to rewind or send some of the transformers back to the General Electric Company for rebuilding practically. And in fact, the first 5 or 10 years where we were still finding some minor troubles that caused some interruptions in supplying service. And by the way, the main purpose of any electric plant, either steam or hydro, is to get your electricity or your service where it's to be used at all times. In power plant work, the main thing for the operators to be sure is the safety to their operators. Their safety to operators.
I'm going to have to stop it because I got it.
Personnel. Second is to keep supply of electricity to where it's to be used. Equipment, of course, that includes the safety to the equipment so that it continues to be used when the troubles are cleared up. I think I did mention that one of the first objects is to keep the electricity where it's to be used, but the facilities and manpower that are responsible for this come in at the proper time. There's many things that happened in the meantime since 1928 that have happened that were major occurrences and things that happen to an engineer or a powerhouse personnel would fill a number of books, not only for Conowingo but for any hydroelectric plant or any steam generating plant that goes into service. To bring certain things to mind was in my time at least, was I forget the date will have to be inserted in this, when we had the big snowstorm in the Conowingo area and in the whole state of Maryland and Pennsylvania. And there's many people who remember of the drifts and the trouble that this snowstorm caused, both for transportation and transmission of power. I remember a number of instances that occurred. You walk most any place you travel in Harford County or Cecil County or in this area, the electric lines were down, poles that carried the lines were down, and it was just, in plain ordinary words, a mess, because many places they were without power for a day time, but some areas were without power for 10 days to a couple of weeks. I remember that very much. And here we were, lived in the Conowingo village with all the power, fortunately, the power to the Conowingo, from the plant to the Conowingo village was not interrupted. I guess it's because it was so well built for local use there that we extra careful to maintain power that we had to use for the operators and so on like that.
Yeah, were there any other, other than the snowstorms, that you had to do something at the dam?
Well,
I remember the one flood.
Of course, the electric companies had field forces, transmission and so on like that, that in these storms and other occurrences that affect transportation and electric lines, that's their job. I was glad to take care of my own job rather than to worry about what the other departments and the electric companies had at that time. I think the general public don't realize that at the source of where your electricity comes from, there's always somebody on duty around the clock. And generally, if your lights go out once, why, that's maybe a tree or some interference on the transmission lines and the distribution lines. And if it comes back and holds, why, probably it was a tree branch or something like that, and that the switch tripped in the power plant, and the trouble was cleared. Sometimes it would come back twice. That means that the trouble was cleared. If it comes back and holds twice, generally it's not too much trouble at the power plant. But if it comes back the second time and goes and trips, automatically the trouble is more severe. But if it comes back the second time and goes out the third time, why, whatever trouble they had at that particular time, they don't know what it is. They'll either go to a different source of supply or get different transmission lines or distribution lines in service to get power to where it is to be used as soon as possible. The general public just don't realize that the organization that the electric companies must have in order to do that. And the electric companies are blamed many times for not taking care of this trouble, or why must we be out of electric service and so on like that. You people that are sitting at home watching your TV and things like listening to programs, you know that when your service goes off outside of blowing a fuse in your own house, that there's some organization and some men jumping around to clear that trouble up as quickly as possible.
Well, you were going to tell me about World War II.
In World War II, I remember that a little personal experience, of course. At that time, I was still old enough to go to the service, and the company at that time made very sure that I didn't have any idea of asking for a leave of absence or whatnot to go into service. And at that particular time, some of the powerhouse men and other organizations patriotically volunteered, left their jobs and volunteered, and in several cases the government sent them right back to their original job at a serviceman's pay. So that scared all of us a little bit, that the best thing we could do was stay on the job and do what we could do there. And this reminds me that the same situation was in World War I, that they did that several times. Several men were sent back at army pay to their firehouse work, and that soon put a squash to doing that, and kept the men that wanted to do something for the emergency. And they found out that they were just as valuable at home as they were other places.
Now, did you have to take any special precautions or anything during the war?
At Conowingo during World War II, the Army moved in on Conowingo, and they used what was known as the reception room as the barracks. And at first, there was the local National Guard, and they used the reception room as the barracks, and before very long, they got to establishing a regular guard procedure for those that had to use the roadway for transportation.
Now, did the guards just lived there at the dam all the time?
Yeah, they made their reception room there as their barrack. Anyhow, until we got more firmly established for guard purpose, we had searchlights on the farmhouse roof, which were kept in operation, and regular patrolling, and anything of suspicion, with any suspicion at all, was thoroughly investigated. And everything was operated in topsy-turvy business for the first 6 months of the war.
Then you get back to a regular routine after that?
Well, of course, during the war, I forget just the number of months, or a couple of years, whatever the period was, we were very closely supervised. No visitors at that particular time at all that were allowed in the plant. And anybody that had work to do or any outside organization that had to do any work on equipment or other things that come up were had to have a pass and with from some authority.
Now, did you have any special to produce? Now, this, for my information, what's the purpose of the dam? Does it? Do they produce the electricity there at the dam?
Oh well, the dam on a hydroelectric plant is to stop the water and allow it to create a reservoir of a certain height. You see, for every foot of water that you have in a reservoir, it's got some energy stored in it. And the higher the dam, the more energy you get. And that particular part of our development is called the head. Now at Conowingo, we have an 89-foot head there. That means that there's 89 feet putting pressure. You see, every foot of water has a certain amount of pressure, somewhat less than a pound. And the head of Conowingo is 89 feet. Now, when you draw the water from a pond like that with 89-foot head, you get to quite a stream of water under pressure coming out at the lower opening at the bottom. And now this is what's called a low head plant. The hydro plants in the west, that goes up to, in several cases, up to 1,000 feet at some of their, but those plants, first of all, the type of turbine you use in a low head hydro plant is entirely different than the type of turbine or driving power that is used in the high head plants. They're called impeller wheels and have other names too.
Now, who determines how many of the gates are open?
The number of gates that are open, we have to make, at Conowingo, we have to maintain a maximum. We don't have to maintain it. There's a maximum elevation that we're legally allowed to go. If we go above that elevation, we back water up on the McCall's Ferry plant. And if we back water up to them, that means they can't generate as much electricity, and then we have to pay them for what they lose to what we would gain at Conowingo. And that's why the operation, the level of the operation of the Conowingo Dam cannot go above a certain elevation. As far as we're at Conowingo, you can draw down and create a void at the top, and that is one of the main purposes of a plant like Conowingo. You're storing energy in water. Now, if you want to generate electricity by steam power, steam turbines, and so on like that, why you've got to fire something up to create steam, and that takes time. In a hydro plant, there we have all this power at a certain elevation, all you have to do is to open a valve, so to speak, to a water wheel and start your generators that way. It's a matter of time, which is very important to keep the supply of electricity available at all times.
I didn't realize that was what was behind the opening of the gates.
The opening of the gates is to mean, is to see that it don't flood out the McCall's Ferry of the boat.
Now, was except for the wartime, were people always able to go visit?
Except in, yes. Daylight hours, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, in the early days of Conowingo, the visitors at that plant went up into the thousands. The first, in 1928, my memory correct, we had a couple hundred thousand visitors. They were just streaming in during daylight hours, and we couldn't take care of them in guided tours. We just barricaded off some of the plant and allowed them to walk from the power plant at that time, walk downstairs. And
then when there were fewer visitors, you started that guided tour.
We'd have guided tours for schools and special groups, individually, unless he was an engineer or somebody that from some other company, they just walked through the plant themselves.
Well, I know I went through with a group of Girl Scouts.
and that's what they still do. Mm-hmm. There's an observation platform midway down there, if you'll look out through the, what we call the turbine hall.
Now, did they always have catwalk to fish off of?
Yes, and that's a story connected in itself, no question about it. The operators at Conowingo, fishermen were a darn nuisance. They dirty up the place for one time, and well, just as the general public, they're very, very careless. At one time, I threatened to clear the gallery. Well, first of all, one time I gave them brooms and made them clean up their fishing debris themselves, and they did it all right. That's one of the problems they still have, is the public, general public is very careless in many respects. Although the general public's pretty good.
But they were able to fish there right from the beginning?
From the beginning. They used to call what, there used to be something there, and I think it's still there, what they call snagging. They will stand at the railing on the catwalk there with a line down below, and keep pulling it up and down, and every once in a while they'll hook a fish. Of course, the game warden is generally looking for that, because that was illegal.
Now, when the dam was built, did they realize that that was going to be used for fishing? Or did this just happen?
Not to the extent that it was. We didn't know exactly whether there would be anything. We didn't know how far the fish were going to come up. Even in the early days and now, there's a lot of people blame Conowingo Dam for spoiling the fishing at, on the river, and it created many different ways of fishing, because I personally remember that shad came up to the Holtwood Dam. I remember that when I worked there.
Now, you were going to tell me about the village that got flooded when put the dam in.
When the dam was, by the way, from the time that the water was entirely cut off the river in 1928, early days of 28, it took 3 or 4 days for the dam to get rise to the elevation that we wanted it. Now upriver, there were some improvements, and one of the improvements was a bridge across the Susquehanna River, and the town of Old Conowingo there, which was a warehouse and a couple other places of business, stores and whatnot, and those buildings people torn down and so on like that, because that was flooded at that particular time. And another thing, while we're talking about that, all the trees that were flooded by the dam had to be cut down to a certain elevation so that boating and so on like that was free, and they were underwater enough that it didn't interfere with boating. And I forget the certain elevation there that worked out.
Now, do you know, did they have to displace many people to put the dam in, or was most of that country just open?
I wouldn't know. Oh yeah, there's numbers of families, and the company had to buy all the property that was flooded by the dam. Mm-hmm. Of course, the company had to own mm-hmm. that. They couldn't flood somebody else's land. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people had to move, and a lot of property changed hands at that particular time.
Yeah. How big an area does the dam supply the power for?
The Conowingo power, you don't know where it's used. It ties in with heavy transmission lines throughout the east. The power grid, that's Conowingo power pumps into probably the very power that comes from Conowingo may be used in Chicago, up in the northeast, Boston, whatnot. You see, electricity is just like a water line. You have to build up pressure at a water line and keep that pressure up, whether that water that comes from one area is used in that area, you don't know. Just you keep the pressure, just the same as if you have a container on your stove, you have it full, you get a cup of water from one spigot, cup of water from another spigot and whatnot, you don't know when you pour it out of the kettle, you don't know whether you use one spigot or from another spigot. Same thing.
And they, whichever area needs the power at that particular time, they would get it from whoever has it at that particular time.
The voltage is on the line. And the amperage, which is the quantity, You see, we don't know what electricity is. We know what voltage is, but amperage, which is what we use there, it flows back and forth through the lines. You really don't know what it is. Now, amperage, amperage will heat. The voltage of your toasters keeps the amperage there, and that's a unit of quantity of electricity is amperes. Now, the power of electricity is pressure or voltage times amperes. See, that's amperage, and that both times and another thing we got to is power factor, which you can't go into a near.
I'm going to have to stop you again because I'm at the end of my tape.